From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Complex algorithms control why a particular headline or ad appears in your social media feed. They can even determine why someone is detained at airport security. But who is defining those algorithms? Strategic futurist Amy Webb explains how a small group of powerful people wield enormous control over our everyday experience and why we should care. In her latest book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Could Warp Humanity.
Because of their limited worldview, and the homogenous makeup of that group, the end products are currently and will be making decisions for all of us in ways that will wind up disenfranchising people.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. So you're typing a text to a friend and your smartphone suggests what you want to say. Or you're backing into a parking spot and your car's alert system beeps louder and faster, helping you avoid a nasty scratch along the passenger door. Our guest today applauds these technological advances, but not without a healthy dose of cynicism. Amy Webb discusses why we should care about artificial intelligence and more alarming impending ideas in her latest book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Could Warp Humanity. Webb is a quantitative futurist and a professor of strategic foresight at New York University's Stern School of Business. She's also founder of the Future Today Institute, a strategy firm that helps organizations prepare for complex futures. We check in with her regularly to hear what's on her radar. Welcome back to On the Record.
Thank you. I always like being here and talking to you.
We always like having you, Amy. So first, tell us, what are the Big Nine? You call them BAT and G-Mafia.
So there are nine companies that control the lion's share of patents, that have a tremendous amount of access to and tremendous amount of capital. They are able to attract the top talent. They have the best partnerships with the world's top research universities. And they're also building out the frameworks that are used to facilitate the various pieces of the artificial intelligence ecosystem. For the most part, it's these nine that effectively have the majority of control and a significant concentration of power. So those companies are based in China and in the United States. The Chinese companies are the BAT. This is Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. And most Americans have never heard of these companies before because you never would have used them. So you can think of Baidu as a kind of Google. And just like Google, they also have a self-driving car unit. And they're doing similar kinds of big exponential research. You can think of Alibaba just like our Amazon, except that in many ways it's orders of magnitude bigger, at least in terms of its e-commerce. And then
bigger than Amazon.
Bigger, well, because there are more people shopping on it. Tencent is a kind of amalgam of social media and payment systems and also back-end healthcare infrastructure. So Tencent actually, and gaming. Tencent's kind of a big, gnarly company that does lots of different things. And these three companies are independent, and they have, you know, independent CEOs, but they're based in China.
Okay.
Right. They're based in China. They're domiciled on Chinese soil. And so though they may be big monoliths, they are still very much under the thumb of Beijing.
So those are the Chinese.
Those are the Chinese side.
BAT is the Chinese. So why do you call the American companies G-Mafia?
Well, the it worked out well that our part of the Big Nine, when you arrange the letters in the right way, spelled out G-Mafia. But in many ways, they do sort of operate as a mafia in a sense. So these companies are Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, IBM, and Apple. And again, these are the companies whose cloud services are being used, whose AI frameworks are predominantly being used. Again, all roads in some way or another eventually lead to these companies.
And it's these, the six big American companies who mm-hmm. you turn into an acronym, and the three big Chinese companies who are creating the infrastructure, creating
the
architecture.
That's right. And I would say that the modern era of AI really stems back to the 1950s, when some of the pioneers then were building some of the foundation for the work that followed. Things like computer vision, which you mentioned at the beginning of the show, when your car recognizes objects in the road and gives you a signal to help you avoid them. You know, but there's sort of a key difference, and I think this is an important point. Now we have nine companies who are overwhelmingly responsible for the frameworks and the data and the algorithms. And I would argue in many respects, you know, the future of humanity as a result.
That's big.
It is. And the challenge is that they're operating in different developmental tracks. So in the United States, these are publicly traded companies with a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders. And because in the United States, we have no national strategy on AI, we have no leadership, and we haven't, not just with this administration, but the previous one. You know, this is sort of evolving primarily within the commercial sphere. And so there's a rush to get AI-driven products into the market as soon as possible without modeling the longer-term impacts, which could be very negative.
It seems to me that you're basically saying we should be worried, we should mm-hmm. be leery. Mm-hmm. And is it the fact that they're commercial companies developing this crucial technology? I mean, we trust commercial companies to do a lot in our economy.
You know, we certainly do. And to be frank, we need them.
Yeah.
So I, you know.
So what are you worried about?
What am I worried about? What I'm worried about is that in this particular case, there are a relatively few number of people with a fairly homogeneous outlook and worldview who are building systems and making choices about which data are used to train which algorithms under what circumstances. And because of their limited worldview and the homogeneous makeup of that group, the end products are currently and will be making decisions for all of us in ways that will wind up disenfranchising people. And you know, I can give you a couple of clear examples
please,
of this. So
please.
If you go to the airport at BWI, and you go through not the metal detector, but that scatter ray machine mm-hmm. At security. So what's happening there is when you walk through it, the system is an AI-powered system. And
artificial intelligence powered.
Right. So it will have, so there's a database that it has, and it has learned, you know, all the different potential body shapes and types. So it's been trained already. And so when you walk through that, you put your arms in the air and you spread your feet out, what it's doing is looking for something different. So is there something about you that doesn't match what it's learned from the sort of way a body should look database? And, you know, for many people, they walk through that system and their body looks just like everybody else's and no big deal. But if you're a woman of color and you have really thick braids, guess what? You're probably going to get pulled aside for an additional security check way more than a white male, you know, or somebody else. And so I can see the look on your face. Like,
well,
what are
I'm
you talking
thinking,
about?
But why on earth could they not build that into what the computer expects?
Sure, they could. It just didn't occur to them. And this is what we see happening over and over again. And it is that, you know, it doesn't occur to somebody that, oh yeah, you know, there are lots of other different body types. I just don't happen to hang out with these people, or I don't see them day to day. And so if it's out of sight, you know, it's out of mind, and therefore it's out of the algorithm. And, you know, this is a case of bias. And to be fair, it doesn't, you know, it's not prohibiting somebody from earning a living. You could argue that it's really not that big of a deal. But these things have a compounding effect over time. And if you find that you are the person who's constantly called out, you find that your access is intermittently cut off or increasingly cut off. I mean, it does make for a somewhat unpleasant, you know, daily living experience. But it's not just people of color and women who are being discriminated against. So if you're a white Republican man, you know, with very conservative leanings, you've also been discriminated against on Facebook. So you're likely, and this is not my data, this is a ton of research and academic studies showing this, the algorithms have been trained to either incite you with salacious content that's going to grab your attention and cause you to keep clicking, or you're not going to be shown factually correct, however right-leaning content. So we're all being discriminated against in some way. And I don't think that the big tech companies are necessarily doing this intentionally, although I've started to think differently recently about Facebook. I really think it's that these systems are extraordinarily complicated, especially in this country. Speed is prioritized over safety. And there's just, you know, a lot of things kind of get forgotten in the process.
That's strategic futurist Amy Webb here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Could Warp Humanity. Webb is also a winner of the Thinkers 50 Radar Award and is a visiting Nieman Fellow at Harvard University. So I want to backtrack and unpack a bit about the concept of artificial intelligence, AI, because you've said before the public often imagines robots on a rampage, that's why we should be worried about AI, and that's not what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So the easiest way to understand artificial intelligence is that it's not a singular technology. It's kind of an umbrella term for a whole bunch of different technologies. But in its most basic and easy to understand form, what we're talking about is a system that's been designed to make decisions about us, for us, on behalf of us, using data. That's all it is. Now, obviously, the modalities of this are far more complicated, but we're really just talking about systems that make decisions. We're surrounded by these systems. They just don't feel magical or special because they're kind of invisible to us, and they've been invisible to us for a very long time.
Are there policies or regulations in place for AI developers?
We do not have policy that regulates or dictates the tenets of AI here in the United States. There are movements afoot outside of the United States to try to regulate artificial intelligence in some way. Canada has its own viewpoint on AI, and it's released a set of bullet points and suggestions. Stanford just launched a center to look at ethics and AI. Georgetown has a center. I mean, I could rattle off a bunch of these, but my point in doing this is all we're doing is diffusing the problem. The thing that's lacking is coordination and collaboration. And now, because we don't have...
Wait, why isn't what you just described a form of collaboration?
Because these various entities, they're not collaborating with each other. You know, everybody's sort of going about this on their own. There's no collaboration. And if you just stop for a minute and think this through to its logical end, if you're Google or you're Amazon, and suddenly there are 20 different perspectives that are somewhat similar, but in many ways kind of different, on what you ought to be doing with AI, and there's no enforcement mechanism whatsoever, then what are you going to do? You know, you're going to keep doing what you've always been doing because there's no incentive to change.
Can you give me an example of an aspect that you think is at risk with all these different approaches looking at it from their own perspective and their own constituencies, and how you'd like to see it handled?
If AI is a system that is built by people that makes decisions for others, then embedded within that system must be human values because choices and decisions have been made along the way. So by default, a system designed using their worldview is not taking me, it's not taking me and my worldview into consideration. It, you know, and think about all of the trouble we have in the world because humans don't agree. If we have very capable, incredibly powerful systems built by humans that are now making decisions for us that don't agree, like what kind of future world might that look like?
Let's ponder that while we take a quick break. Lots more I want to ask you. Amy Webb is a quantitative futurist and founder of the Future Today Institute. We're talking about her latest book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Could Warp Humanity. As I said, short break, then we'll talk about ways to combat the tech titans. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking with author and futurist Amy Webb about her latest book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Could Warp Humanity. She's given us an overview about how artificial intelligence affects the daily lives of humans and the directions in which AI could go. So, Amy, in the last section of your book, called Pebbles and Boulders, the metaphor that you use for people versus AI, you suggest ways in which to prevent the impending crush of humanity, the pebbles, by the giant boulder of AI. Talk about that.
Yeah. So the analogy is not mine. It's actually from Vint Cerf, who was one of the co-founders of our modern internet. Vint has this analogy when talking about creating systematic change when it looks like the odds are stacked against you. And it's this, which I've applied it to AI. So, you know, imagine that you're living in a tiny little village at the base of a mountain. And at the top of this mountain is an enormous boulder. And forever, it's been there. You've been living with it. Maybe it's a little scary. But you almost kind of, it's like become invisible to you, you know?
And like living with a volcano.
That's right. And like every now and then you're sort of reminded of the fact that, oh yeah, maybe this is a bad thing. But for the most part, it doesn't seem to be putting you in immediate peril. You don't feel a sense of urgency. So the boulder is AI. And you're at the bottom of this village, at the base of the mountain. And let's say that one day you look up and you realize, you know what? That boulder looks like it's gotten a little closer. And it might be moving slowly, but sure enough, you see this thing starting to make its way down the mountain, and it's going to crush you and everybody else in its wake. Now, what are you supposed to do? You're one tiny little human. How could you possibly do anything about this enormous boulder? And the story goes, you know, the laws of physics are working against you. So you're not going to be able to stop this thing on your own. However, if you were to pick up a pebble and march up the mountain and put it in just the right spot, you could divert that boulder a little bit from its path. And it may still not be enough to protect your entire village. So you grab a friend and they grab a friend and you grab a bunch of people and everybody marches up the mountain with their pebble. And you put the pebbles in just the right spot. Collectively, you divert the boulder from its path and your village is saved. You know, the boulder moves ahead and sort of like life goes on. I guess what I'm trying to say with this analogy is that artificial intelligence is here. It is here already. It's been here. And we have an opportunity now to divert some of the serious challenges that are ahead. And the second part of the book are scenarios where I describe what the next 50 years could look like. There's an optimistic framing, there's a neutral framing, and there's a catastrophic framing.
Really scary.
It is really scary, and it's not intended to sensationalize artificial intelligence. It's, you know, these are data-driven scenarios. It's what we see. So the question is, what's your pebble? You know, if you're one person, what pebble can you pick up and help the boulder move differently and help us get onto a better path? So here's an easy one. If everybody listening understood what artificial intelligence actually is and what it's not and why it matters, and this is not a difficult ask, it's, you know, then that would help everybody out because it would mean that we're starting to make smarter decisions. So that's one pebble. Here's another pebble. If you download an app and it's free on your phone and it's doing stuff like putting cool cartoon faces on your face, you should stop and ask yourself, who else might have access to this data? Is my face being used to train somebody else's system, and in what way? And am I okay with that? It's another pebble that you can pick up. Yet another pebble is, and again, this is now going to depend on what you do for a living, but if you're a university professor, you know, the Baltimore area is home to tremendously great programs that many of which intersect with artificial intelligence. You know, if you're in a situation where you've got an all-male tenured faculty, here's a pebble that you can pick up. Mentor somebody else and help, you know, you're not going to change things overnight, but figure out ways that you can start diversifying that staff of people who are teaching our future, you know, engineers who are going to be building these things. So if we can just all be much smarter and more aware and effectively plug ourselves in to what's happening, that's going to make everything better going forward.
Essentially, should we always assume the worst about something that is free or cheap?
You know, that's a good question. Well, you're a journalist. You're skeptical. What do you do? When somebody presents like a new free digital something, are you prone to...
It depends kind of how convenient it makes my life.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. I depend a lot because I have a terrible sense of direction. I depend on GPS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I assume that my travel history is being used to build some algorithm or something.
Right. But wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to make that assumption and instead we could just see? Because I'm the same way. I'm constantly lost all the time. So it would be nice if I could click something and it would tell me, like, in exchange for us giving you this free data, this service, here's what we're doing with your data. Just be transparent.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with futurist and author Amy Webb about her book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Could Warp Humanity. Webb is also author of the best-selling book, The Signals Are Talking, Why Today's Fringe is Tomorrow's Mainstream. Your subtitle, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Could Warp Humanity, is pretty foreboding.
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty ominous.
Is that what you want people to take away from the book?
My concern is, again, the trajectory of artificial intelligence is decades. So we are in the process of a slow-moving explosion. We're in the middle of it. We're at the beginning of it, I should say. Which means that we do still have some time. But if we continue to believe that artificial intelligence is way off on the horizon, then we're going to wind up living in a future that most people don't like. And the reason that the word warp is part of the title of the book is because I believe that unless we make some serious changes right now, that our futures are going to be uncomfortable, that humanity is going to be on a different track than it might otherwise have been. And that has me incredibly concerned because, you know, some of the things that are on the horizon include a reduction in choice. You know, it may feel like we have all of these conveniences when in actuality, we actually have much less choice and far fewer freedoms than we might have had in previous years. You know, there have been a lot of comparisons made to the Industrial Revolution. You know, and the Industrial Revolution, the world looked absolutely nothing like it did before it started. My concern now is that we are in a similar situation with artificial intelligence. However, during the Industrial Revolution, what was automated was manual labor, physical work. What's being automated now are cognitive tasks. And I'm just really concerned. And I'm hoping that the book will galvanize a national conversation, and I think it has started to do that, but that also it will make people feel a sense of urgency, that they want to do something different to make a positive change today. Because while the title sounds ominous, there is a chapter on optimistic scenarios for the future. And there's a lot in there. That world that I describe in that particular chapter is a world I'd be very happy living in. And I think that AI really does hold tremendous promise. But in order for us to achieve that optimistic future, we got to be willing to put in the work today in the present. It's hard work, and it's something we all have to do together.
Well, you're right. You are starting a conversation. I appreciate your sharing some of it with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Amy Webb is a quantitative futurist and founder of the Future Today Institute. We've been discussing her book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Could Warp Humanity. We have a link to the book and other forward-thinking information by Webb at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. On the Record's director and engineer is Nathan Sterner. Maureen Harvey and Melissa Gear produced the program. John Ahrens wrote and recorded the On the Record theme music. Tara Zarfashan is our intern. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you're with us. Join us again on the Record tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.